Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Multiusiverse podcast. Today's episode is going to be a knowledge doozy. That is to the benefit and to the experience of our guest, Vaughn Cassidy, who's coming to us from the Department of Environment of the state of Tennessee. There's a lot to learn in this episode, but it mostly comes from anecdotal knowledge and stories of a man who's been working in the industry, thinking about material reuse, and thinking through solutions for not only the government side, small businesses, but also the industrial side of reuse in Tennessee. We start out talking about a great anecdote that we all might be familiar with, which is the famous YouTube clip of researchers experimenting with a group of players passing a basketball back and forth and a gorilla that passes through the frame that 8 out of 10 people don't notice. What's important about this is all about our biases and what we're trying to understand around what we see and what we don't see in the solutions that we're trying to create or the problems that we're trying to hurdle and the problems that we're trying to solve. A lot of great stories are about to come your way. Please enjoy. And if you have any questions about anything Multiusiverse podcast, please reach out to us at podcast@reapley.com. Enjoy the episode. Vaughn, thanks so much for joining us today. You cannot come more highly recommended from people that we have in common. I'm so excited to talk to you.
Wow, the only goes down now.
Exactly. can you share a little bit more about who you are, what you've been doing in Tennessee, and sort of some of those good works?
All right, sure. My name is Vaughn Cassidy. I work for the Tennessee Department of Environment and Conservation. I work for the Office of Policy and Sustainable Practices. I'm an environmental consultant, too, because we kind of have ranks, kind of like military. Very long title. It's the first thing I ever get nervous about is actually introducing myself, because my business cards have a fold-out. You know, I work with the government. I started off in air pollution. And in air pollution, you had a really – and that was a regulatory program. And I wasn't a really good fit for a regulatory program because I wanted to be too helpful. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. I'm not saying that they see it as a bad thing. But you're there to do the regulatory work, and to say you guys are doing these things according to this permit. You're not there to question things. You're not there to say, hey, what's that? You're not saying, hey, what's this? You're there to do a job and get out of there and go on to the next one.
Right.
And I frustrated my managers quite a bit, so much so that they decided, Vaughn, maybe you'd be happier somewhere else.
So wait, you're saying that you were doing the classic 5-year-old thing that we all do in sustainability is ask why? Like, why is this?
Yeah.
Excellent.
My grandpa always told me if you ask why 5 times, you get right to the core of the answer. And so I would go into places and basically the classical analogy is awesome. It even works mostly in person, but it works also on there's a YouTube channel that shows this to you. There's 2 teams of 3 people, one with white shirts on, one with black shirts on, they're bouncing a basketball. And they ask you to count the number of times it bounces from the white team to the black team. And in so doing, at some point, a dude in a gorilla suit just kind of wanders through the set. And 5 out of 8 people don't see the gorilla. So what I'm essentially doing when I go into these facilities, these guys are there all day long. They're doing this. They're doing this job very, very well. They're doing it to a specification, and they don't see the gorillas. And I don't always see a big monster problem, but when you see a gorilla, it's nice because you get to seem smart. But you're just a guy off the street that goes, "Hey, what's that?" Because you don't know any better. So when we started doing that, I've been doing this for long enough that they didn't even know what to call it when I first started doing it. And they were like, well, what is it that you're doing, Vaughn? We don't understand. Like, I'm trying to help these folks do something besides throw this stuff away. And they're like, well, that's a cool idea. Why don't you go and do that some a little bit and then go over here and do this other stuff we asked, the stuff we're paying you to do. Could you do that for us, please? So finally we changed. And I'm not saying that that's good or bad. That's just the time that we were living in. It was very antagonistic. The EPA were the bad guys. And then us by definition, we were the bad guys too. And we would come into places and if you were helpful, The best compliment I ever got was a couple of guys said that they said that I made the unpleasant pleasant. And to me, I thought getting fined like $25,000-$30,000 because I walked in the door and saw something wrong would be something they'd be really worried about. But I mean, they you know,
it is the fascinating part between businesses and their government, where it's all about that framework, and businesses tend to actually be pretty good with understanding the why. Like if something's there, and they maybe made a misstep. That's all well and fine as long as it's not a surprise, right? I mean, is this where, you know, what you're sort of coming in and doing is sort of piecing together, hey, this is where you guys need to do maybe things a little bit differently in this way. I got to slap you on the wrist here. You got to actually sort of eat this fine, but this is the way that we need to go. Cause this is the new sort of, this is the path that might lead to better environmental solutions.
Right.
And then sort of where did that leave you? Again, as you sort of were like, okay, maybe there's something else I could be doing because I'm the one seeing some of these gorillas. What was the next step there? And sort of how did you get more involved in sort of the environmental aspect and that solution aspect?
Well, what we did was we started having a supplemental, I never can say that word very, very well, supplemental environmental projects.
Right.
And we would say, and then I actually got to be a person that said, how about we don't make that city take $20,000 of their taxpayers' dollars and put it in our pockets. How about we have them, yeah, make them spend the money, but make them spend it on something that will fix what they did, fix a problem. You know, make them buy some wetlands there and then have them put it in a contract in perpetuity that they won't bother it or something like that. So we began to do things like that, and the whole thing just turned around, and it got to where I was able to, you know, I kept a little journal of all these little, I kept like a little narrative journal. I would tell folks about this and about that. And I would get like LED lights, and I'm sorry, not LED lights, those old metal halide lights.
Oh,
there were thousands of those things getting changed out. And I said, why don't we recycle those? And I looked forever to find somebody that would recycle them. And I got that stuff taken care of.
Describe those lights real quickly for those that don't know. What these are some older lights. Describe them.
Well, the big metal halide lights, they you know they're there even if you're blind because they hum.
They hum, exactly.
Like, you know, all the time. And you don't you become ear blind just like you become nose blind. You're in a facility and you're like, I don't hear it. Like, you can't hear that? Come on. So they were really good lights because the forerunners of all the LED lights, the first ones that they had, they replaced the halide lights, were really dangerous because red and green and blue, you really couldn't distinguish. So if you were doing something like, I don't know, working at Milan Arsenal Army Ammunition Plant and wiring a bomb, you might want to be able to distinguish the red wire and the green wire, right? So because they made cluster bombs, they made depleted uranium missiles, not missiles, but deployment ordnance for the A-10 Warthog, the plane that hit all the tanks. So they had to be able to see. So they were all against that. This is so dumb. Get these lights out of here. So they kept the metal halides until they couldn't replace them anymore.
Oh, wow. And so then that's when the new LEDs came in on this.
Correct. Yeah. And that the color spectrum was really, really good. And gosh, those things that, man, it's like, I've seen those things get changed out to where, you know, if you think about it, and I'm essentially lazy. So I thought about, well, gosh, that's way up there, man. These guys got to use a man lift to change the lights out every once in a while, right? They don't want to do that, do they? Maybe you get on their good side by putting an LED up there and never changing it again until some guy retired.
I mean, isn't that in itself almost a great anecdote for sustainability or environmental solutions, that we are in the age of actually finding solutions that are not only maybe better performance wise than the solutions, but now actually have these external effects that are also better. I mean, how much of that plays into sort of how you talk about the work that you're doing? Tell me more about sort of how the idea that even just popped into your head.
Mm-hmm. Well, the stuff that, you know, I mean, regulations are they're a study in failure. It's like, oh, dang, we didn't mean to do that. Now we got to fix it somehow. So let's make a regulation that you can only do it so much, or only do it a little bit, or only do it not so much, only do it here, only do it there. And then eventually you've got the studies in failure, which are trying to find a reuse for things. And it's really, okay, I sorry to do this to you. I'm gonna tell you a story about Michael Jordan. Somebody asked Michael Jordan one time, they literally asked, what a dumb question. Like, how'd you become the greatest basketball player ever? And they thought, this kind of laughed it off. He didn't laugh it off. He said, and he knew exactly. He said, I missed 9,612. I'm being exact.
Yes.
I don't remember. I missed a certain amount of free throws. I was called upon to make the game-winning shot 27 times at the final buzzer, and I missed. And he said, if you want to be successful, fail more often. And I'm like, wow, what I need is a boss to give me permission to fail. That's what I need. So I went to go see this guy that was the sustainability officer for Walmart. And he was the worldwide sustainability officer for Walmart. And all he talked about was eggs. Eggs for half an hour. And I'm like, you talking about eggs for half? What is up? I mean, you got 8,000 superstores, supercenters across the planet. You talk about eggs? He said, Vaughn, we waste enough eggs to bury Manhattan every single day. Wow. I was like, whoa, that is amazing. So there's a thing on YouTube called The Secret Life of Eggs that he was put in charge of. And they did all these crazy things that they were spraying all these barcodes on all the eggs and like scanning all the eggs. And they were like, you get a broken thing of eggs, had like seven good eggs. So they have a guy sitting there going like, well, I'll put five good eggs back. You know, they had all this unproductive work. It was a big monster mess, you know? So they had to just sort of fix the problems that they could and just get weaned along as they went along. And I actually don't know how they solved the egg problem.
To a large degree, it's probably a substantial problem that we see just with food waste in general, and that's really built into the system now of trying to solve that across the board. If anybody who's listening, you know, look up some of the more recent food startups that have sort of popped into the area, one of which based near the closest one I could think to you is based in Atlanta, where it's all about trying to recover as much as possible. I don't know how much they do with eggs and how much they do with sort of, again, any sort of corporate or enterprise food waste, but the need is there. And it's been astounding to watch. What I'd love to sort of dive into is you said something maybe 2 minutes ago about sort of failure in reuse. And I'd love to sort of learn more too about that, of how you've sort of begun trials and iterations around solutions that you've been working on over time. What comes to mind? I mean, is what sort of programs we've done? We've had some conversations with you about material reuse. You have a storied past in working with Daniel on our team about reuse and material reuse. How has that played in sort of the work that you've been pursuing over the last couple of years?
Well, it just takes what it takes, I guess, really is that I really, really cannot stand waste. I just hate it.
That's a good obsession.
It keeps me up at night.
Exactly.
It does. I mean, I wish that it didn't sometimes, but I walk around with my theorists out all the time, and you can keep databases and type things in and keep notes all you want. You're never going to be an expert in everything. You can't be.
Exactly.
As a matter of fact, I've had a couple of consultants said, Vaughn, I'd love to hire you, see what you're doing, but we'd go broke before you made any money. I mean, it's a great thing you're doing, but gee whiz, man, it's just the study and failure. It's amazing. So here's a good example. There's a thing called a short fiber drum. They're called short fiber drums because it's the last roundup of that cardboard. Short fiber. Cardboard shrinks up, the fibers shrink. So they get smaller and smaller. So they're less and less elasticity, therefore they're less and less viable to be recycled. So their last hurrah is as a short fiber drum. And these short fiber drums were being used by this company. And that's my thing, I can't use names a lot of times. Anyway, there was this
yes.
Do what?
Don't use names, yeah.
Okay, so the short fiber drum was being used and they were just being wasted because they didn't have any way to get rid of them necessarily because nobody wanted them. And I was sitting in this meeting about our pharmaceutical take back program. And they said, well, if we could find a good source of short fiber drums. And I'm like sitting there almost falling asleep. And I'm like, what's my segment? What was that? And so I gave them the phone number. I hooked them up with these people. And then TBI goes to this facility, goes to like three or four of their facilities in Tennessee, picks up their short fiber drums, and they're able to collect this unwanted medical waste. And then it gets incinerated. Wow. Which, that's a one-off, but gee whiz. I mean, that's
it speaks to, though, that the effort that we've both been involved in with making the manual connections like that less manual and more automatic. And whether that's through a platform, whether that's through, again, just broadcasting throughout a community that, hey, there's a central place where you can bring that request. There's a central place where you can say, hey, I've got this. Who knows? And leave it up to some creative individuals or leave it up to just the demand to take place around a material. That's huge. And I don't think people sometimes realize how that process works. I've been there the same time where it's like, wait, I just heard you say that magic word. And this other person said, I need this thing. And when that connection happens, there's economic savings, there's environmental savings, there's an impact generated on sort of a really large scale.
You know what I never did? I never did it because I was always discouraged from doing it because nobody liked the analogy. It's like, you know, these dating apps.
Absolutely.
Okay. So I'm not asking personal experience. I mean, me either.
Personal experience. Yeah.
I'm happily married and that's one of the ones the old fashioned way just happened.
Yes.
But you know, we live in an age where if you want to go out with a 6'4" Hasidic Jew that loves to surf butt naked at midnight, you get 12 hits by midnight.
Oh, yeah.
You just enter the information. So we can't get rid of our cardboard? What's up with this? You know? So they gave me the idea. And, you know, of course, there's nothing. The old online materials waste exchanges have been around forever. Very few of them are very successful at all. Yep. I can give you the very, very disheartening statistics. 2% of the people that are on those waste exchanges make even one transaction in 2 years. So it's 98% failure across a 2-year span of time. And you know, that's with people that really care and really want to get rid of material. It's the data crunching that we're in the golden age of right now.
Yes.
Absolute golden age. I knew when I saw the first commercial, it wasn't that long ago. So the first commercial that, remember that girl, there's a guy that goes to the hotel way out west. And he says, you guys have any movies? And she sent him the magazine. She goes, all rooms have every movie ever made in history. Like, whoa. It's ready to hear some stuff now, man, because there's no way we can't crunch this information.
And I think to your point on that, it's like, how do we figure out what those keys are to unlock the value in that material sourcing, that material matchmaking? That really for us is, I'm Reaply's always here to have these conversations, or Multi-Usiverse is always here to have these conversations. I'm not always here to plug Reaply, but it is for us at Reaply all about how are we connecting those dots in ways that can allow the network effect to take hold, where it's not just about connecting one source to one piece of demand. It's about connecting an entire organization that might have multiple sources, multiple material streams, and connecting that into a community. And how can we actually sort of scale that and begin that matchmaking process where then some revenue can be generated? Because if we can crack that code, and that's just not a wee thing for Reaply, that's a wee thing for you, Vaughn. That's a government side. That is a small business to enterprise side. There's an entire ecosystem that needs to sort of band together to actually create those matchmaking opportunities.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, you know, the easy stuff is over with.
Right.
You know, it's over, guys. The cardboard, the plastic, the glass, it's over with.
Yes.
That, we got ready-made outlets for all that stuff. It's the weird stuff that is maybe even not necessarily all that valuable, but like there's a company that makes acrylic dust.
Hmm.
And it comes from do you know what a baghouse is?
No.
A baghouse is if you have an operation that's cutting something, cutting metal, cutting plastic, cutting.
I love industry anything. Terms like this. Yeah. Okay. So a baghouse. Yeah.
So it it sucks the dust off of that. So you're not having to breathe it in your body so that you don't have OSHA all over you. And plus you end up, dying at 56 from some mesothelioma because you didn't know you had it. So it pulls all this dust off these operations and it pulls it into this big bunch of cages with socks pulled over them.
Totally.
And it sucks it through there and it gets stuck on the sock and the air goes out the top. So they reverse the air every once in a while on a schedule and pop the socks loose. All that stuff drops to the bottom. And then you have this perfect, unspoiled,
very fine
type of, all the this perfect colloidal properties, all the same size material, and they throw it away.
Yep.
And it makes me it's just like a knife that sticks in my ribs, man. Like, don't throw it away. So we went to a cat litter place that isn't there anymore. It was a very old one called Southern Cat, and they had they existed in an area where they get all this red clay, and they made cat litter, which of course they drive off all the moisture, yep. So you can then put it in the cat litter box and it'll absorb, suck up all the moisture. So that stuff had fine particles that were falling out called bentonite, and I was like, I heard of that stuff before. I drove down the road; it was a farmer's co-op down the road. Whoa. Said, oh yeah, we buy bentonite from, I don't know, Kansas or somewhere. I said, dude, do you know, like
down the road, miles
away? He said, the place that's gassing us all out with all that smoke all with them? I said, probably.
not that problem. Not that we can address that another time. Exactly.
So they got this stuff from this. It was perfect. They got it from the bag house dropout, the big, huge super sacks. But super sacks is just, that's what you think of it. It's just a big giant nylon sack. And they unhook it from these machines, these bag houses, and they blew it over all these ponds and areas because pigs and cows need a pond or something to get cooled off or to drink out of.
Roll around.
So the water would seep through there because they made this pond. So they put the bentonite clay, this clay would sink down and make this perfect seal, and it wouldn't leak anymore.
Whoa.
The pond would stay full. So, do I get any money? No. Thank you, Mr. Government Man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no finder's fee on that one.
I had a guy one time at an asphalt plant. I did something similar to that. I can't remember exactly what it was, but the boss was there, and the guy that was manager of the asphalt plant said, why don't you hire Mr. Cassidy? And that guy said this. That's why he's the boss. He says, he works for the government. So I got Mr. Vaughn right where I want him.
That's excellent. I love the story you just told. Do you have, what's the weirdest reuse story that's sort of stuck around with you?
The weirdest reuse story that worked or didn't work?
Oh, well, I could take either, actually. Because, the failure of reuse, I'm so down for it. It's all about the experimentation, yeah.
So they melt glass. You make glass out of kaolin and a few other things, and you roll these big ball mills, these big ceramic balls, and it bashes it all up. And then you run it in this heated furnace, there's this molten flow of all this molten glass, and they strain it out through these little stringers, make it into sort of like spaghetti, and they chop it up, and that makes most of your fiberglass. So the runs of this stuff, there's all this impurities from glass. So they run out and there's this beautiful emerald looking material. So it drops out and drops in this water bath where it cools off. Well, these guys got permission to capture that stuff in these little skillets. Lodge Manufacturing, also in Tennessee, by the way, one of the only skillet manufacturers left on the planet.
They're the only pan I use, literally.
Really?
This is not a plug. They're the only pan I use. Go ahead.
that's a cool story as well. So they have these little skillets, and they put them under they just captured a few of the little globular dropouts of this molten glass, and it cooled off, and it made this beautiful, because it wants to take an economic shape, so it's perfectly round. So it's in this little bitty skillet that they bought, and there's this beautiful green globe now sitting there that sits there, and they sold those things for, they had a little side business, they sold those things for don't know, $8, $9, $10.
Whoa.
About 3 or 4 months later, I wasn't there. They were in the main office room, and the first thing they ever made exploded.
Okay.
Shot glass everywhere. I'm like, oh, that was weird. Started getting phone calls. Yeah. They had sold about a couple hundred of these things. And what happened was it just took that long for it to finally cool down to the very center of it. And for some reason, the molecular structure just exploded, busted to pieces.
So that's a great example of a reuse failure where it's now learned, now we have to pay more attention to those molecular properties when we're creating a reuse opportunity.
Right. Or maybe like, you know, have some forethought and let it sit around for a while. I don't know. I mean,
maybe even cool it, instead of just letting it,
I never, good grief. I never thought of that. Yeah. Cool it. Gosh. Anyway.
Exactly.
So the best success I've had, and again, I can't use any names. I can tell the story. Anybody that's familiar at all knows who it is, but I just can't tell you the company names. There is all these monitors that we had for years and years and years that had CRT in them. That's cathode ray tubes have lead in them. They're leaded glass. So you're probably way too young. My daughter, we had some TVs that still worked. You turn them off, they go. They had a little bit.
Just a little bit too young. Yeah.
Okay, so those were cathode ray tubes.
Yep.
So they're very hard to dispose of. So a company up in Wisconsin actually found a way to take all these, and they must have every one ever made. They have this endless supply of glass. They got these cathode ray tubes out of all these computers and TVs, and they could actually de-lead them. And they've been pretty reticent about telling me how they do that. I don't bother to ask because it's a patented process. But we tested it and tested it and tested it. So there's no lead in the glass. It's amazing how they de-lead the glass. So they de-leaded the glass on a contract, but the glass kind of just laid around. So a tile facility, tile manufacturer, said, let's try some of that glass in our ball mills that we usually use sand for. And yeah, sand's pretty cheap, but the glass is cheap too. The sand is mined out of the ground. It's better to get the glass. It's better to have above ground mining better rather than going in the ground.
Right.
So they drove that stuff. They were driving the stuff from somewhere in Wisconsin all the way to Atlanta. And that's, you know, they were doing it. I don't know how they were paying for it. I have no idea because I didn't ask. So they were going all that way down there. And there's a little exit called Exit 24 in the middle, about halfway down to Atlanta in a little city called Clarksville. And they were like, could you bring that glass to us and just see if we can use it? Well, now it all goes there.
Oh, wow.
So they can reuse it. It goes into tile, and they make half the trip. They're saving half their fuel bill, which right now is the people perk up.
Significant.
When you say that.
Yes. Yes. I think that's I love those stories. I could eat those stories up all day. Cause again, it comes down to how are we scaling experimentation? How are we scaling community connections? Is huge. How are we broadcasting almost to communities outside our normal people we interact with? This is what I've got. This is what maybe we could do with this. It's crowdsourcing that potential a little bit for innovation. Right. And that's what I love about these stories.
And you know, really, industry is only a small aspect of it. But even within industry, we're talking to the wrong people oftentimes. Not that the EHS person or the environmental health and safety, or in some companies it's safety, health, and environment. It's the other way. They're designated titles. Those folks are busy doing, you know, they don't see the gorillas.
Right.
Because they're not paid to see the gorillas. So the guy to talk to is the procurement guy or even the financial officer.
Yep.
You know, like, who would think to talk to the procurement guy about recycling? But he's the dude that decides what goes in the material. He's kind of the actuary that goes, we need to pay this much for plastic, this much for rubber, this much for metal, this much for, and they're the perfect people to talk to.
Yeah. Well, because again, to look for those gorillas, they're looking for the gorillas that are going to save money and build margin into the product.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. But the crowdsourcing thing, I think if you look at somewhere like, the materials marketplace platform that the U.S., that the United States Business Council for Sustainable Development,
UCBCGSD or something.
So those guys did a great thing, yeah, and their best work. Example of their crowdsourcing is right there in Austin, Texas.
Yes.
And we're talking about pickup truck loads of stuff. We're talking about lockers and, you know, bricks, simple stuff, but everyone's involved. So the overall impact is not what it is in Tennessee. We have like four or five big heavy lifters making our numbers go way up, but the impact, social impact, is not that much, because the guys that know about all that stuff, I could fit them in this room, right? Everyone that knows about it, you know. In Austin, Texas, everyone knows about it because they're all doing this. You got moms and pops, and you got food trucks. Everybody doing all this stuff. They're sharing everything from syrup to bricks to you know, extra brick mortar, extra concrete. I mean, it's far better in my opinion. Even though the impact is not that much, but you get that story out there and get people, because culture. What is the saying? Culture trumps strategy every time.
Yep. And I think that's fair. I think it's all, you know, it really is sort of how do we hit use language, but like, is that zeitgeisty sort of opportunity where it sort of, or, you know, that viral is actually, I guess now the more proper term, that sort of that virality for a story, or a mission for that mom and pop to say, hey, I've got these, I'm trying to think of, you know, for all we know, it's vegetable leftovers or something from, you know, their normal operations. Yeah. And how can I help connect that to the local co-op to use in their whatever it is for their soil, their compost. It's making those connections, but scaling those connections in ways that had never been done before. And instead, again, we're not matching people to people on swiping right or left. We want to swipe those, that glass left over from that industrial process.
Why can't we have a Tinder for this stuff?
Exactly. That's what we need. Yeah. It's the, you know, if I think Reaply, you know, this is the direction we are heading, and I think I'm excited to work in that capacity from materials. I don't know how much our branding team will let me, proclaim that as the Tinder for materials, but we're going to work on something like that, because this is what's going to come down to, is how can we make those connections faster? How do we actually build in the information and the data needed so that finance person, that actuary, that person who's actually trying to work through the sciences of the product that they're making can know that while this is being reused, it's still just as good as a component at the sort of commodity level as what they were using before.
Right. The only big problem, and I guess we're running out of time, no idea, but the only big problem we have is if I'm a guy sitting over here looking at, like say we're going to do industry to industry, like just pipe to pipe.
Yes. Yep.
And you're not, no middleman, like you throw this stuff away, I want it, bring it to me. The logistics and all that stuff is a solvable problem. But my big issue is this: if I'm going to risk my end product on your waste material, and I'm going to use it as my primary feedstock, what if you get more efficient one of these days?
Right.
And then I don't have anything else.
Yeah.
So I've got to have, you know, I've got to diversify my portfolio enough where I can look at all this material. The other thing, and I have no segue for this. I apologize. I missed it a minute ago.
No, you're good.
As far as like culture being trumped, I'm sorry, strategy being trumped by culture, you got to tear it all down to like the extremely basic things like a 5-year-old would think.
Right.
Like, okay, years ago, people used to not take baths. Who you know that didn't take a bath? I mean, other than somebody that lives under a bridge somewhere.
My dog.
Yeah. Well, okay, your dog. All right, you got me. Okay, so anyway. But, you know, we brush our teeth. We use dental floss. We use deodorant. You know, we take the baths. Well, that wasn't all that common not that long ago.
Right.
You know? I mean, there's somebody, you go back, you get like, if you go back, like, again, make a nice Twilight Zone episode, but it'd be kind of boring, except for people, so a nerd like me, go back 200 years and go, I want to invent deodorant. Like, you're going to laugh right in your face. Come on, take a stick of what? What's in it? Aluminum sulfate? No way, dude. I'm not doing that.
Is that where we're headed? I mean, is that where we're headed, where this is going to be such an obvious solution, where we're being more efficient as an economy, that we'll get looked back on and be like, wait, y'all were throwing how much of this back in the ground? Why were you doing that?
Just imagine, okay, just think about this. Not that there's lots of other things you want to hope for. This isn't the end all be all of existence or anything, but think about, you're going to tell your grandkids, you can walk by them and you go, you know, we used to throw that stuff away. And the kid's going to be like, did you take your medicine today?
What's wrong with you?
Are you serious? No one throws that stuff. This stuff's too valuable. Besides that, we gotta dig a hole and throw it in some hole somewhere.
What's it gonna take to make that material more valuable, in your opinion?
Wow. It's gonna take to make that material more.
That reused material. What's it gonna take for that reused material to be more valuable?
I don't think it'll be economics. For most people, it's like, I was in a elevator with a guy that had just quit smoking, and I had come up. I mean, and I said, "Hey, that's great. You're gonna your lungs are gonna heal twice as fast. You're gonna feel better. Your circulatory system." He goes, "No, my wife told me I stink." Seriously? So I think that people are just gonna get. They're just gonna be like. There's just going to be this inherent thing where they go, why they really throw that away? I'm tired of wheeling the trash can out to the curb.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sick of all the stuff piling up.
The tide will turn then sort of on that culture then. The culture will then be pervasive, not only at home, but then probably at that corporate level too, is where we need it.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I still want to know why my chips are in this reflective metallized polymer bag.
Yes, exactly.
I don't have a good answer for that.
Yeah, hopefully. I know there are a couple companies trying to solve that answer too on why are we using that shiny crinkly bag to store these potato chips.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, I look forward to more of these stories, more of this problem solving ahead with Yvonne. This was so fun. What sort of ending advice here would you have for young problem solvers out there who are seeing these gorillas and who are trying to get sort of now their headway into maybe changing the world for the better?
Never stop reading labels and never stop asking why. I go to Walmart. Now, I have fun at Walmart. My wife hates going to Walmart with me because I grab a bottle and I'm like, you know, walnut oil, like a bottle of walnut oil, like this tall, is like $15. People buy that? Really? What's in that? How did it get there?
Yep.
You know, who made the bottle? Who made the bottle cap? Who designed the logo? Where's all that stuff going? You know, just never stop being curious and never stop asking questions.
And I love that. That will get you to some core problems that can then provide some better solutions for. Thank you for taking the time. I look forward to next time, Vaughn.
Thank you. Hope it didn't bore you.
No, sir, not at all. That was perfect. That's exactly what we needed. Everyone's going to love it. So thank you, sir. Talk soon.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.